live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A. It's the Young Turks. You're about to watch what we call an extended clip of the Young Turks. And the reality is it's somewhere in the middle. It's a little longer than our YouTube clips, but it's actually shorter than the whole 2-hour show, which you can get if you're a member. You can get it ad-free, and make sure you catch every news story we do that day. You're going to love it as a full show. That's at tytnetwork.com/join. All right, welcome to a heart-pounding Monday and a heart-pounding week at the Young Turks, because tomorrow night we have massive elections. Among certainly the top three nights of the primaries, New York was obviously the top three that night. That had New York and Maryland, where Ben Jealous and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez won. California was a huge night. Well, tomorrow night it's Kansas, it's Missouri, it's Michigan, it's Washington. There are 13 wonderful Justice Democrats that are up for election tomorrow night. So don't miss a minute of our coverage. You know the live show, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, tyt.com/live. And then at 8:05 Eastern tomorrow night, election coverage begins. And if we win, we will be, of course, as we have been throughout the primary season, very, very excited. And if we lose, it'll be heartbreaking. But tonight, after the show, after the Young Turks, a special Rebel headquarters, where I will be interviewing 9 of the Justice Democrats that are up for elections tomorrow. So they're quick interviews, but I want you to know them. I want you to understand who's running. You know some of the names already, like Brent Welder, but there are so many more out there. We've talked to almost all of them on Rebel headquarters, but we want to bring them all back together, the Justice League, before elections tomorrow. So don't miss that tonight at 8:05 p.m. Eastern, tyt.com/live. If you miss any portion of any show, you could always get it at the home of progressives by becoming a member. tyt.com/join to become a member. Now, tonight's show, Manafort trial begins, and there is important updates from there. Speaking of trials, Donald Trump might be having one soon. Admits yet another crime accidentally. That story is a doozy. I'll have that one for you in the next segment. And then later on in the program, Alex Jones has been kicked off of Apple, Facebook, YouTube.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
No, I'm kidding around. We didn't get him. And not only that, I will explain in detail later in the program why in the past I have fought for the right wing online, and why the right wing's biggest enemy is not us, although it's close. It's actually Alex Jones himself. So I'll explain those details, and they're really important and interesting. A little bit later in today's program. Like I said, don't miss any of it. tyt.com/join to become a member and get the whole show. Okay, so now, as usual lately, we've been starting with a little bit of fun. So we got Sacha Baron Cohen, but we also have some parts of the TYT network as well. So let's go over here. So Sacha Baron Cohen's at it again. Showtime series is Who Is America? And he has been busting these guys up. Understand that he did not solely target conservatives. He also went after people in the media and also liberals. So smart folks in the media like Ted Koppel and in politics like Bernie Sanders immediately said during the interviews, you can see it, it's on the show itself, this is nonsense, it doesn't make any sense. So they were quick to call him out. And on the other hand, conservatives, not so quick. By the way, you know, there's people that are in the art community that could be described as progressives who also were not quick. I'm just trying to give you the full context. In this case, Sheriff Joe Arpaio, he's a criminal. He was pardoned by Donald Trump because Donald Trump liked the laws that he was breaking. And that was, of course, by the way, not listening to court orders. Donald Trump doesn't really believe in the American justice system, so that's not surprising. But we're going to have fun here with how Cohen got him. First of all, he's dressed up in this case as a Finnish YouTube star, which is already fun. His handle is OMG Whizboy OMG. Somehow he got Joe Arpaio, a massive right winger, to sit down for unboxing videos. And then madness ensued. Let's start the first video.
Delish donut, do you want to say hello? Hi.
The Lish donut is anti-guns. I think all the guns should be given back.
Delicious donut, you have to understand that you have to follow the Constitution and the law and allow people to have guns.
But I want the guns to be taken back because they are dangerous.
Bad guys are going to get their guns. It's going to kill you. I'm hoping that somebody else in there has a gun and will shoot that person before he shoots you.
Oh, okay then. Thank you for telling me that. Because I like guns. Everybody knows I've got a really big collection. I have over 43 guns.
You have 43 guns?
Oh, yes. I've been collecting them for the upcoming race war.
All right, listen, when he says I've been collecting them for the upcoming race war, that's when you get up, take the mic off, and you're done with that interview. Unless you're Sheriff Joe Arpaio, and you're like, huh. Although I was pleasantly surprised to see that Joe Arpaio thought 43 guns was a lot. He's like, whoa, okay, apparently there is some limit. And the way that he got this interview is he pretended to be in favor of Donald Trump, OMG, whiz boy, OMG. And in the beginning, he talked about how the communists are trying to stop people from having guns. And Sheriff Joe was like, yo, yeah, that's right. And that's why he goes and talks to Delish Donut, which he calls Delicious Donut. And he's like, now, Delicious Donut, remember, people are trying to kill you. Okay, now, he's going to say some things that are far worse. Although I'm not positive he understood what he was saying. We'll get to that in a second. But before we do, I actually want to go to my favorite clip, because I love the look of Sheriff Joe Arpaio's face here as Sacha Baron Cohen just does fun nonsense. Watch.
And so Flüvelu Ovelu Tykefu and Tykefu Antel Fadsen Kurt Kurfödlete Echenemil Plups.
He's killing it, man. He's absolutely killing it. Who is America on Showtime? The whole series is amazing, not just the stuff that they release in public. But Sheriff, get up. If you don't agree with the flu-flu, boo-flu, get up, get up, get up. He won't get up. And then so at the end, this happens.
My first job was a hand job from my mother, and it was newspapers. What was your first hand job?
So let me say this, me. Whatever I did in my life, I always did that extra. It gets me in trouble sometimes.
You wanted to give the best hand job possible?
Extra sometimes.
Oh, so if Donald Trump calls you up after this and says, Sheriff Joe, I want to offer you an amazing blowjob. Would you say yes?
I may have to say yes.
Indeed, after what Donald Trump's done for him, basically made sure that he doesn't go to jail when he was a convicted criminal and should have gotten to jail, I suppose maybe that is in order. He can claim that he didn't quite understand what he was saying, and you can see that in parts he really has kind of lost it. But I thought that was fairly clear. I mean, he said hand, he said blow. You know, the accent wasn't that thick in those particular cases, besides which it doesn't really matter. What matters most is revealing their true nature, and that's why the show's brilliant. Because, you know, the fun jokes about hand jobs, okay, all right, great, God bless, I enjoyed that, okay? Okay, but the essence of it is, hey, Delicious Donut, now remember, you know, when people are coming to kill you, you should have a gun too. So talking to kids about guns, and he's done this on countless occasions with conservatives that are massively pro-guns, etc. And by the way, Sheriff Joe was right at the end when he said, sometimes doing that little extra is what gets him in trouble. So for example, that extra interview he did with not Sacha Baron Cohen, but American Free Press. Well, what are they? Well, they are an anti-Semitic weekly publication. Okay, he claims, are they? I didn't know that. Well, Sheriff Joe, if you did one interview with them and you didn't know what they were about, okay, that happens, I can understand. You know how many interviews Joe Arpaio did with them? 5. that little extra. That's what defines Sheriff Joe Arpaio's career.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Perfectly exposed. All right, now I'm moving on. Let's go to Kyle. So Kyle Kulinski does a show called Secular Talk. It's part of the TYT network. I happen to think he's awesome. He's been on the Young Turks before as well, this particular show. And now you're going to get to see why some people call him the Kyle Driver. I love nicknames. Sometimes I call him the Crusher, but I like Kyle Driver better now. So Fox News made the mistake of asking him to be on air. They thought that they were going to steamroll him, as they do with all left-wing guests, that they would present right-wing framing and then ask him to scramble and defend it. Well, Kyle doesn't do defense as much as he does offense. So he decided he was going to go on the attack. You're going to like this. So first off, they do a whole little section I'm leaving out here, and you could watch the whole interview on Kyle's channel on Secular Talk. We'll have the link down below. They set up this framing of the far left, the far left. And this is when the liberals are supposed to apologize for it on Fox News. But here's what Kyle Kulinski does instead.
Kyle, should moderate Democrats worry about this far left push?
No, I think that the far left is actually the way for Democrats to win, believe it or not. So when you look at the polls and you look at all the substantive policy issues, the American people overwhelmingly support Medicare for all, for example. They overwhelmingly support free college. They overwhelmingly want to end the wars. So when you go issue for issue, the American people are actually with the far left. And in fact, President Trump, when he ran in 2016, stole some of those issues. He ran against the wars. He ran against the trade deals.
And Kyle, you might have a point. He also said he wasn't going to touch any of the entitlements, Social Security or Medicare. You make a good point.
Kyle Driver. All right, my favorite parts of that clip are the looks on the right winger's face, Chris Stegall, and let alone the Fox News host. So first they go, okay, now the far left, you go ahead and apologize for him. And Kyle's like, no, I think they have the right positions. And the right wing host is like, he didn't see that coming. And then when the Fox News host agrees with Kyle, goes, that's a good point. I mean, yeah, American people are in favor of those positions we've been calling far left. Then Stegall's like, he's not anywhere near done. So then they play a long clip of a Just Democrat, Cori Bush. She's got an election coming up tomorrow in Missouri. She's a wonderful candidate. They sent someone to trip her up about the tax rates. I think Cori's position on tax rates are exactly right. She didn't give a great answer, to be honest. And I might have even said that. But Kyle didn't say that. They're like, okay, now apologize for Cori Bush. He's like, no, I don't think so. Listen to this.
Kyle, is that the future of the Democratic Party?
I hope is the future of the Democratic Party.
Okay.
Jeff Bezos has over $100 billion at the same time that we have 60,000 homeless veterans in this country and 400,000 homeless Americans. And the American people, again, to go to the polls, overwhelmingly want to raise taxes on the rich, overwhelmingly want to raise taxes on Wall Street and corporations. I'm talking about 58% of Americans. So if your strategy is to defend the rich, by all means, go right ahead.
Kyle Driver. I love the facial expressions and the way he turned around. He's like 60,000 homeless veterans. And they were like, that's uncomfortable. Man, you messed with the wrong dude. So now Chris DeGaulle is going to try to throw in the usual, not only right wing framing, but the usual lies that they throw in there as well. No, you're on with a Kyle Driver. It's not going to fly. Watch.
We're still talking about radical fringe stuff, abolishing ICE, abolishing law enforcement.
You know, abolishing law enforcement? Why are you making things up? That's made up. You just made that up. Who says abolish law enforcement? Yes, you did.
Well,
you just made that up.
Who said abolish law enforcement?
Nobody. You did.
Is ICE not law enforcement?
Customs and Border Protection already protects the border. ICE was created in 2003, and by the way, there are allegations of them literally doing slavery.
Fellas, one second.
Kyle Driver. Okay, you just made that up. No, who, me? Yeah, you. No one on the left has ever said abolish law enforcement altogether. Never said it. And even if you're talking about ICE, Kyle makes a great point there about the history of ICE and how it is actually duplicative. And so, terrific points. And then, so at that point, they're like, mercy. Blah, 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 blah. Kyle, blah, 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 blah. Please stop talking because you're killing us. I love it, man. If you're going to go on Fox News, that's how you do it. So, Kyle Kulinski, Secular Talk, check it out. He does Kyle Drivers all day, every day on Secular Talk. And next time you ask him on, great, that's awesome. Just be careful, because he packs a punch. Okay, he didn't see it coming. I love it. All right, now speaking of not seeing it coming, let's go to Brent Welder. Okay, so Brent Welder, of course, progressive candidate in Kansas 3rd District. He's going to shock the world tomorrow night. I have a fun prediction on that coming up. But the right wing has decided, because the corporate Republicans think a lot like the corporate Democrats, that, hey, you know what, Brent Welder will be maybe in their minds easier to defeat if he wins the primary and goes on to the general election. So the people who are running this ad are actually right wingers, even though it seems very positive, Brent, in the beginning. Okay, the guy who is the founder of TD Ameritrade is Joe Ricketts. And his group is called Ending Spending, and they're the ones who paid for this. His son, by the way, is Todd Ricketts, and he's the finance chair of the Republican National Committee. So I want you to watch the whole ad. In the beginning, it seems like it's for Brent. At the end, they turn against him because they're right wingers. And then we'll talk about why they did it and what I think are the results. Let's watch.
Meet progressive Brent Welder, community organizer, friend of Barack Obama, and ally of Bernie Sanders. Welder wants to bring Obama-Sanders progressivism to Kansas. He'd raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, wipe out tax breaks for big corporations, make college completely free, and he supports single-payer Medicare for all. We don't need more Obama-Sanders progressivism. Brent Welder, too progressive for Kansas. Ending Spending is responsible for the content of this.
They put in $150,000 to run that ad. So there are two possibilities. One is they're like, Kansas, I mean, wouldn't it be crazy if you guys all had health insurance instead of being nervous wrecks about whether your family's going to live or die? Isn't it crazy that he's actually fighting for the American dream for your kids in terms of college education and higher wages for you? That's possible. And that's why at the end they say Kansas is not for progressivism. It's also, of course, possible, and his opponents have been complaining, that this is done before the primary to try to get Brent Welder to win. Now, mind you, there are conservative groups in Washington pretending to be progressive who've already poured in over $600,000 of ads against Brent Welder, trying to make sure that he does not win as a progressive in Kansas. So those are theoretically left-wing groups, but they are pro-establishment. So now in this case, My best guess is these knuckleheads think, oh yes, yes, we'll do this ad that makes Brent look progressive. Maybe he'll win the primary and he'll be, in their minds, easier to defeat. I have one message for them. Be careful what you wish for, you just might get it. So if Brent wins the primary tomorrow night, and I've got a prediction coming up on that for you in a second, he is going to beat Kevin Yoder with a stick. He's going to beat him real bad, of course, politically. First of all, there's already a poll out showing Brent kicking Yoder's ass, 49-42 public policy polling. He's got a 7-point lead on the incumbent. This district should be blue by all intents and purposes. It voted for Hillary Clinton in the general election, it voted for Bernie Sanders in the primary. Donald Trump is polling the 30s in that district in the middle of Kansas. And Kevin Yoder is one of the most right-wing congressmen there are in the whole country. He's also one of the most corrupt. He takes more money from the payday lenders than anyone in Congress. Those are basically legalized loan sharks. But they get corrupt people like Kevin Yoder to do their handiwork for them in Congress to score over the average worker in Kansas who needs a loan for a little period of time, and they charge him sometimes as high as over 300% interest rates. And Kevin Yoder aids and abets that robbery of the average American. You think that he's going to have an easier time with Welder? Are you nuts? Brent doesn't take any corporate PAC money. He's uncorrupted. So he's going to get to call you corrupt day in and day out. He's running ads against Yoder right now, calling him corrupt. What are the other Democrats doing? Patty cakes, leading from the middle. That's literally a slogan from one of the other Democrats in the race. Another slogan is the courage to compromise. No, they're going to come at Yoder real soft.
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your activity more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
And they're not going to talk about his systemic corruption and how he works for his donors. And they're going to try to do a Republican light. Brent Welder is not going to do that. He's going to fight for you, and he's going to come with a whooping stick. So be careful what you wish for, because either way, whether you like it or not, Brent Welder is going to win that election. And that is, in fact, my prediction. So the day before the primary, let me go on the record. Brent Welder will win the primary in Kansas's 3rd district. He is a phenomenal candidate. Justice Democrat, helped by other progressive groups like PCCC. So many people have chipped in here, but he has done an amazing job of organizing volunteers, raising small dollar donations. He's uncorrupted, and he has run a campaign that was unapologetically progressive. We are actually going to fight for the average guy in the middle of Kansas. And we're not going to let the donors and their corruption win this time. And Brent Welder will win the primary tomorrow night, and then he will win the general election easily. I predict he beats Kevin Yoder by double digits, sends him packing, and then he'll probably go, Yoder will probably go get a job with one of his corporate donors, because that's who he works for anyway inside Kansas and inside Congress. So here comes Brent Welder. I don't say it lightly, and I didn't say it earlier, and I don't want to jinx it, but I'm keeping it real with you guys. I think Brent has run an amazing campaign, and my political assessment of his chances is he's going to win. And when he does, that's another Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. That's another deeply progressive win that the rest of the media did not anticipate. Here comes the Justice League. Young Turks. All right, back on the Young Turks. Let me read some comments for you guys. First, YouTube Super Chat. Stabby666 writes in, I think I'll see what's going on the Alex Jones channel. Oh, well, look at that. Okay, we're going to talk about Alex Jones a little bit later in the program. Danny Knapp, of course, he's kidding about how it doesn't exist anymore. Danny Knapp writes in on YouTube Super Chat, Kalinske for Senate 2022, Chuck Schumer's days are numbered. You never know, brother, you never know. And then on Twitter, Eclectic Miscellaneous says, Kyle did that interview exactly how progressives should do the media. Don't let the host or guest control the narrative. Show that the progressive policies are popular and that progressives will not take other people's crap anymore. He did TYT proud, hashtag too strong. All right, indeed. Proud to have him as part of the network. And we have the popular policies. We should mention that in every interview and every time that we're brought on. We represent the American people. All right, now let's go over here and do some more stories. Charlie Kirk and Candace Owens were having breakfast over the weekend. They're part of Turning Point USA, and that is a group that is meant to do propaganda across college campuses and intimidate professors who are exercising their freedom of speech. So nonetheless, they are the group that most loudly cries about how their freedom of speech is abridged. Now, that is a great, great irony and hypocrisy. But this weekend, there were some actions taken against them that I do not agree with. I wanted to show that for you guys. As always, we believe in being principled here and being for freedom of speech no matter what. And then we'll find out if Charlie Kirk is actually for freedom of speech. So first, here is video of that encounter in Philly. Out. Yeah, I don't agree with that. They poured water over his head. It's not the right thing to do. One, because it's anything physical is not the morally right thing to do and not the progressive thing to do. Number two, it allows them to play the victim card, which they can't wait to play. So why would you help them like that? Now, let me give you a little bit more of the video and then I'll give you full context. Candace Owens, who was there, wrote a tweet saying, Charlie Kirk and I just got attacked in capital letters and protested by Antifa for eating breakfast. I don't know if it actually is Antifa, that's what she's claiming, but this tweet already contains at least one lie. She went on to say they are currently following us through Philly, all black and Hispanic police force protecting us as they scream F the racist police. Now, on the video it appears that there are also white officers, but that's not at all important. The lie is that they were chanting F the racist police. I want to show you the video and you will see for yourself that they're actually chanting F the racist policies, which is very, very different. Watch. Policies is clear as day, repeated over and over again. And it doesn't sound that much like police, it's policies. So now, that doesn't affect the fact that the person shouldn't have poured the water over Charlie Kirk. I'm sure Charlie would agree that protesting him is a freedom of speech issue, because that's what he claims all the time when they do it to the left. I'm kidding that I'm sure Charlie would agree, because Charlie often does not agree with freedom of speech. It's just whenever it is convenient. In fact, they have a professor watch list with over hundreds of professors on that list where they try to intimidate them into silence. Now, I want to be clear one more time here. Doing anything physical is not the right direction. And I agree with Philip Wagman, who wrote for the Washington Examiner, that it allows for easy martyrdom for these guys, and they don't deserve it. But I do also want to point out, as they're in the middle of crying now, although Charlie was smiling ear to ear throughout the entire video, every time they panned to him, he had a giant smile over his face thinking, yes, I'm now the victim and I'll get to claim that my rights have been abridged. Now, but does Charlie actually care about rights being abridged? And especially on the issue of freedom of speech, because he puts all these professors on a watch list, they get death threats nonstop. Some so much so that they are driven from campus. And for example, a professor at Drexel named George Cicerillo Marr was not allowed back onto campus by Drexel University unless he had security with him. And they put him on administrative leave even though he had just expressed his freedom of speech. But Charlie Kirk thought, great, let's intimidate them. And that's the whole point of his professor watch list. At that point, he didn't seem overly concerned about freedom of speech. CNN caught up with him on that and asked him, hey, aren't you concerned about these people being punished for exercising their freedom of speech? Look at his answer.
Some of these professors have gotten death threats as a result of being outed on these websites. Do you see that the watch list has responsibility for that?
I don't have sympathy for people that are in public life that say these sort of statements and then try and play the victim card.
You don't have sympathy for people who say outrageous statements, as you do all of the time against immigrants, minority groups, etc., and then play the victim card. So I assume today that Charlie's not playing the victim card or Candace Owens. Oh, they are all over the internet and all over media. Oh my God, I'm the victim. They protested us. Well, you want people to protest all those professors who are actually doing their job. The irony, I don't know if it's lost on them because they're not that bright, or if they think, irony, that's for liberals. We don't care to be principled. We don't actually care about freedom of speech. Don't you get it? This is just propaganda. So that's exactly what they're doing. Here, I got another example for you guys. You guys know the BDS movement, that's the boycott Israel for their occupation of the Palestinians for decades now. Now, you might agree or disagree with that principle, but there's a bill that was proposed in Congress that is particularly odious. It is among the most unconstitutional bills that I have ever seen. It would punish people for exercising their freedom of speech against Israel. How's that remotely American? So let me give you an explanation of what it is. The ACLU sent a letter to the Senate saying this bill would impose civil and criminal punishment on individuals solely because of their political beliefs about Israel and its policies. Well, you say punish, but ACLU, what would be the maximum penalty you can get if you were to dare to speak out against Israel? Violations would be subject to a minimum civil penalty of $250,000. That's the minimum. And a maximum criminal penalty of $1 million and 20 years in prison. Well, I mean, but look, guys, Charlie Kirk mainly focuses on college campuses. How about college campuses? Well, The Intercept reporting on US campuses, punishment of pro-Palestinian students for expressing criticisms of Israel is so commonplace that the Center for Constitutional Rights refers to it as the quote Palestine exception to free speech. Well, I'm sure that if you ask Charlie Kirk about it, he's going to be principled and say that is outrageous. And if people want to be in favor of BDS, they should be allowed to. It is a freedom of speech issue, especially on college campuses. Well, luckily he was asked. What was his answer? Kirk condemned the BDS movement as anti-Semitic. Okay, so I just want to understand what you claim are your principles. So if you think something is discriminatory, apparently it's okay to ban it. Now, I don't think that's right, but apparently that's your position. Charlie, you're free to clarify. Do you think it's that law that is being proposed on the BDS issue in Congress is outrageous and an affront to freedom of speech, which it clearly is? Or do you think it's totally fine because you happen to think that movement is discriminatory? Because people think you're discriminatory. So I guess that would mean that you should stop crying every time someone protests you. Like I said, doing anything physical is unacceptable. And that person who threw the water needlessly put them in a position where they get to play the victim card, when in reality, the rest of the folks there were exercising their freedom of speech against what they consider to be discriminatory and offensive speech that Charlie Kirk and Candace Owens do. And if they're still crying about that, they have no leg to stand on at all, because they are the world's largest hypocrites. They don't actually believe in freedom of speech. They love trying to intimidate professors and in some cases even endangering their lives by putting them on a so-called professor watch list. And they have never shown any concern for the freedom of speech of those professors, the protesters, or anyone who does not agree with them. So understand who they are. That's who they are. Okay. Now we move forward to Donald Trump. Donald Trump has lied several times about the Trump Tower meeting. So that is not conjecture anymore. Donald Trump has confirmed it. So if you like Donald Trump, I always ask, which Donald Trump? The one that was lying before, the one that admits that he was lying today. So I'll give you the quotes, you can judge for yourself. But if you want to know what the Trump Tower meeting was, that was when Donald Trump Jr. got a note from a friend of his saying that there are Russian agents or people connected to the Russian government who would like to give you information about Hillary Clinton. And he said, I love it. I'll give you some details about that in a second, including that quote. And Donald Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, Paul Manafort all attended the meeting. And now apparently Michael Cohen is saying that Donald Trump Sr. also knew about the meeting ahead of time. And of course, there's good evidence to that effect because a couple of days before the meeting, Donald Trump was on the campaign trail talking about how there's going to be damaging information coming out about Hillary Clinton soon. Gee, I wonder how he knew that. Now, back then, when this meeting was first discovered, Donald Trump Jr. put out a statement. But we now know it was dictated by Donald Trump. That's another admission. I'll give you the details so you're not confused about it in a second. But at the time, they had said, we primarily discussed a program about the adoption of Russian children that was active and popular with American families years ago. So when they're discovered, they say, oh, no, that was just about Russian adoption. Now, this weekend, Donald Trump Sr. admits that that was a lie. He says on Twitter, fake news reporting. A complete fabrication that I am concerned about the meeting my wonderful son Donald had in Trump Tower. So he's saying the fabrication is that he's concerned because he's not at all concerned. He goes on to say, this is the damaging part. This was a meeting to get information on an opponent, totally legal and done all the time in politics, and it went nowhere. I did not know about it. So let's note a number of things there. He just admitted it was not about the adoption. It was to get information against his opponent. That's not me saying it. That's Donald Trump saying it. So if you think that's fake news, take it up with Donald Trump, because apparently he's the one disseminating it. A complete admission. It was, in fact, to get dirt on Hillary Clinton. I told you that he would not get away with it because he is too stupid for a cover-up. Why would you admit that? He's so unbelievably unintelligent. So that's he's a lawyer's worst nightmare, going all around admitting things that he made up. So now his defense here is, oh, there's nothing wrong with it. You know, you can just go get research done on your opponent by the Russians. No, you can't. That's taking money from a foreign government. That's illegal. Oops. And by the way, why did you write the last sentence? I did not know about it. I thought you said in the rest of the tweet that there was nothing wrong with the meeting. If there was nothing wrong with the meeting, why does it matter that you didn't know about it? It almost seems like you're trying to cover your ass. And by the way, you accidentally threw your son under the bus there, as well as yourself. So Jay Sekulow, his lawyer, had earlier said that that meeting was about adoption and not about getting dirt. So what does he say now? He told the Associated Press, Sekulow acknowledged that the public explanation for the meeting has changed, but insisted that the White House has been very clear with the special counsel's office. In other words, we've been clear with the special counsel. We didn't lie to them. We did lie to you guys. Our story has changed, he confirmed. So we'll get back to that in a second as well. So. Jay Sekulow, back in the day when he was asked not only what the meeting was about, but did the president himself dictate that note, had said the president was not involved in the drafting of that statement. Man, that is incredibly clear. When Sarah Huckabee Sanders was asked about it, she said he, quote, certainly didn't dictate that note. Now, here's something slightly inconvenient. Later, the New York Times reported the lawyers for Donald Trump acknowledged that Mr. Trump dictated a statement to the Times about the 2016 Trump Tower meeting between some of his top advisors and Russians who were said to have damaging information about Hillary Clinton. And in case you're a lunatic who thinks that the New York Times just makes things up, let me clarify for you. His own lawyers acknowledge and actually bragged about it to the New York Times. That's why it was in the New York Times. We sent a letter to the special counsel admitting that Donald Trump did dictate the note. So now that is two lies. One, they originally said we didn't dictate the note. Now they say, yeah, we're just kidding, we're lying. Donald Trump did dictate the note. Number two, originally they said it's not important. It was not about the campaign, it was just about adoption. Now they say, yeah, just kidding, it was not about adoption. It was about the campaign. And yes, it was to get damaging information about our opponent. And who's a genius who admitted that? Donald Trump himself this weekend. Moron of morons. Okay, I'm not done with him yet. So, well, are we sure that they knew that the information was coming from the Russians, which would make it illegal? Well, the note, the email sent to Donald Trump Jr. by Goldstone said that they have sensitive information that is, quote, part of Russia and its government support for Mr. Trump. Donald Trump Jr. responded to that by saying, quote, if it's what you say, I love it. They knew that it was from Russia. They knew that it was information that would help them. That is an in-kind contribution, as I'll explain in a second. That is an illegal attempt to accept information and an in-kind contribution from a foreign government. Thank you very much for proving the case before we even go to trial. Couldn't possibly do a cover-up. Way too stupid. His idea of a clever cover-up is, oh, I got it. And he once bragged about this. He's like, I'll call it a witch hunt. That'll get him. Oh, so dumb. Okay. Back to the New York Times. The president's White House and legal advisors have said for the past year that misleading journalists is not a crime. Now get a load of that. Because what does that tell you? They say, well, I mean, look, we lied to you, but that's not a crime. Lying to the special counsel would be a crime, but we didn't lie to the special counsel. We told them that we were lying to you and, this is the important part, the American people. So it's not a matter that's open to question anymore. These are his lawyers saying, yes, we lied to the media. So who's doing the fake news again? Here it is, them admitting they're the ones doing fake news. And when you lie to the media, it isn't about lying to the New York Times. It's about lying to Americans. You're the president of all of the United States of America. And here you are, you and your lawyers, bragging about how you lie to Americans all the time. And their main defense is it's not a crime. Well, that's of course also not true. Lying overall to Americans is by itself is not a crime. Otherwise, you'd have to put away all the politicians. But in this case, the collusion could be. So now we're back to his lawyer, Jay Sekulow. He says, the question is, what law, statute, or rule, or regulation has been violated? And nobody has pointed to one. Well, Jay, no problem, can do. So let me go to the Associated Press again. They explained, but the legal experts have pointed out several possible criminal charges, including conspiracy against the United States and aiding and abetting a conspiracy. Federal campaign finance law makes it illegal for a campaign to accept a thing of value, such as a financial contribution from foreign nationals. Opposition research could be counted by investigators as a thing of value, experts have said. So they took time and money to get that, to do that research, in this case to steal the emails from the Democrats. And so giving that clearly has value. And they gave it over, obviously. In this meeting, they thought that the Trump team was going to receive that. They wound up making it public as well. So their only defense could be, it's not any of this stuff. Hey, we attempted to do something criminal, but then we realized they didn't have the goods. So we couldn't accept the stolen materials we were hoping to get, and we couldn't collude with the Russian foreign government that we were hoping to collude with. That would be their best defense. And boy, that's a crappy defense. Okay, here we go to one more campaign finance expert. Rick Hassa says, the courts would have to consider the opposition research from Russian agents, quote, a thing of value for campaign finance purposes. Very, very clear. Now, after all this comes out, I'm wondering, are Trump's lawyers and aides going to say, I mean, he meant it. Yeah, of course. This is part of a secret strategy to admit that we're guilty in public because we're playing three-dimensional chess? No. CNN reports President Donald Trump has been urged to stop tweeting about the 2016 Trump Tower meeting between Trump's top advisors and several Russians. A source familiar with the discussions tells CNN. Washington Post confirms sources inside the White House saying, Mr. President, please stop tweeting. Why? Because of course, all it does is get him in trouble. This is why you don't put your guilty client on the stand. But here, he's taking the stand on a national stage and they can't stop him. So the other day, he admits obstruction of justice by asking the Attorney General to stop the investigation of himself. He says it publicly on Twitter. And now this weekend, he says, yeah, it wasn't about adoption. It was to get information about our opponent. I got him, didn't I? And his lawyers and all the aides are like, oh my God. Ugh. That's why his top two lawyers have already left the building. It was the case of their life. It would make their careers representing the president. They're like, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. This guy's a hot mess. And by the way, he clearly did it. Young Turks. Thanks for listening to this podcast. You're only halfway through, so hold, stay right here. Just want to remind you, if you want to get all 5 segments of the Young Turks commercial free, these are just 2 of them. Every day we do it. So go to tytnetwork.com/join and you get the whole 5 segments, 2 hours, ad free. Do it now. Okay, back on the Young Turks, Cenk and Anna with you guys. First of all, I want to let you know something fun. Pop Trigger had a great guest. It's an actress that you might know as Meredith from The Office. That's certainly how I know her. Her name is Kate Flannery. So check that out. And she answered important questions regarding their long-awaited reunion. So youtube.com/poptrigger. Okay. And I got some tweets for you or some comments for you here. YouTube Super Chat Wonton says, welcome to TYT Chat, homeless Alex Jones streamers. Feel free to donate to TYT. Have a nice day. And we do have news about that, of course. Elliot makes a great point. The axis of right left is made up concept to bring all Americans to the corporatist center. Majority of Americans are united on the issues, healthcare, wages, etc. Only that supposed center doesn't agree. That's exactly right in 2 different ways. One, all the things that Kyle Kulinski talked about on Fox News, all the things that the Just Democrats run on the core issues, raising wages, healthcare for all Americans, college for Americans, etc., are things that we all agree on and that Congress doesn't want to give us because we're not their donors. Number 2 is they do have bipartisan agreement on terrible laws like punishing your speech if you're for the BDS movement of Israel. So 43 senators, including a ton of Democrats, signed up for that. Ben Cardin, a Democrat from Maryland, co-sponsored it. So you have bipartisan agreement that our Constitution doesn't mean anything, but you also have bipartisan agreement that you guys will never get anything. The donors will get everything. So keeping it real on that. Okay, I'll just go as quickly as I can here. Jackson Lasher also says on YouTube Super Chat, progressives are coming for you, GOP. The movement is only getting larger. Here we come in 2018. That is true. Ms. Tigard 1908 says, thank you for the great works. Thank you. And finally, Juan Lanuza says, lock them up. Lock them up about Trump Jr. and Sr., presumably. Mm-hmm. All right, Anna, what do you got for us?
All right, we have some updates on the Paul Manafort trial, so let's get to that. Paul Manafort is currently under trial due to a number of different issues. Now, I want to be clear that this particular trial has nothing to do with Russian meddling in the election, but it has everything to do with how he did not disclosed the fact that he was a foreign agent, essentially worked with pro-Russian forces in Ukraine, made a ton of money, up to $60 million, and attempted to hide some of that money from the US government so he wouldn't have to pay taxes for it. So he's been charged with all sorts of things, and now he's under trial. And his business partner, Rick Gates, is also testifying in this case. He agreed to cooperate with prosecutors, with the federal government, give them information, all as part of a plea deal. Now, today, Rick Gates actually testified, and some of this testimony is interesting. Before I get to the details of his testimony, though, I do want to point out a few things about the judge. The judge is making some curious decisions or statements already. So, for instance, he is against the use of the word oligarch during this trial. That apparently was a point of contention between him and one of the prosecutors. He also didn't like the fact that the prosecutors were talking about the items that Manafort had spent this money on, including incredibly expensive, gaudy, and unattractive suits.
Yeah, he's a Reagan-appointed judge, presumably right-wing. He didn't like the talk of the ostrich jacket that cost $15,000. I love that prosecutors brought that up.
Did you know that the ostrich jacket was purchased to match an ostrich vest? And in total, both articles of clothing cost $24,000.
I didn't know that, and that is actually a very effective defense of Paul Manafort, because if you have an ostrich vest, what are you going to do? Not get the ostrich jacket to match it?
You got to match.
I mean, that would be embarrassing showing up at a party with only an ostrich vest.
We here at TYT are not in favor of fashion faux pas. I'm kidding. Obviously, we're very much in favor of fashion faux pas.
Okay. All of a sudden, I'm on the underside of a bus for no reason. You don't see me with an ostrich jacket.
I know. All right, so let's get to Rick Gates and his testimony. First off, a prosecutor questioned him while he was on the stand and said, "Did you commit any crimes with Paul Manafort?" With Paul Manafort. And Rick Gates responded with, "Yes." Okay, fair enough.
That seems clear.
Gates also told prosecutors that he had embezzled money from Manafort by creating false expense reports on his own behalf. He didn't state an exact dollar amount, but estimated it to be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Gates said that he had authority on some of the offshore accounts to move money, and he did so through wire transfers. He said Manafort was unaware. Now let's stop right there, because the defense is arguing, of course, on behalf of Manafort, that Manafort is really the innocent guy here. Yes, he was sloppy with his finances, but the real bad guy is Rick Gates, because Rick Gates was doing all sorts of things behind Manafort's back, and Manafort was just unaware. Now, based on that portion of the testimony, obviously it supports the defense. However, throughout the questioning, Rick Gates made it abundantly clear that Manafort was aware of certain shady business. Now,
so let me give you context there. Mm-hmm. So Manafort got $60 million for his foreign lobbying efforts. If he had actually just reported all the money and reported himself as a foreign agent, which is technically what you are if you're representing a foreign government inside the United States, it would be fine. I mean, it's outrageous amount of money, but that's okay. It is what it is, right? The question is, do we have a crime or not? But he hid $30 million of it. So he reported $30 million, he hid the other $30 million. He put it in the offshore accounts, et cetera. And he asked Rick Gates to run that stuff. So Rick Gates handles his illegal operation, but while doing so, apparently there's no honor among thieves. So Rick Gates thinks, well, I might as well take some for myself. Mm-hmm. So he also embezzles from Manafort. Now that's going to help Manafort's case, because his lawyers are going to say, oh, poor Manafort. Did he get $60 million? He had no idea. He thought it was only $30 million. No, he didn't. Okay. So he knows how much he put abroad. But they're going to help make that case by saying, but Gates also stole from him. It's that evil guy, Rick Gates, that's the problem.
Right.
But Rick Gates worked for Manafort. Manafort was his boss. Manafort's the one that did the deal with the pro-Russian Ukrainians. He's the one who arranged this whole setup in the first place and asked Gates to put the offshore accounts to hide the money in the first place. I'm sure he didn't agree to Gates also robbing him, But that's the full context.
Exactly. So it's not as if one person is innocent and one person is guilty. They're both bad guys in this scenario, right?
So right. Let me give and you- Gates has already pleaded guilty, so yes. We already know how guilty he is.
So Cynthia Laporta is an accountant who also answered a few questions from prosecutors during this trial. So this accountant actually filed his taxes in 2014 and 2015. Now she testified that she was in on discussions to falsify a loan document at the direction of Gates so that Manafort could afford to pay his 2014 income taxes. So she's answering questions, and the whole point of this, at least from the defense perspective, is look at Gates. He's the real ringleader. Remember, Manafort is also facing charges for falsifying or fraud in order to secure loans, right? And this is the part of the conversation involving the securing of loans.
Can I add more context there? So you might be wondering, Jesus, Lord mercy, the guy made $60 million. What do you mean securing loans? What more loans does he need? Because the idiot spent it all on ostrich jackets.
Mm-hmm. He was making it rain at suit stores all over the place.
At ostrich.rus. I don't know. I have no idea where you would get a jacket like that. But anyway, so he spent so lavishly on houses, the extravagant suits, et cetera, that he ran out of the $60 million. So then he needed to get extra loans. So he lied about his assets on loans, and that's another thing that he's being charged with. Gates also helped him with that. So the fact that Gates is cooperating with prosecutors and telling this story is really, really important.
Yes. Now, the damning evidence that was submitted by special counsel Robert Mueller, the very person who continues to be demonized by the right. Well, the special counsel has entered into evidence dozens of emails and financial documents. The emails are key to their case because several show Paul Manafort participating in conversations involving financial claims his former accountant, Cindy Laporta, has testified were fraudulent. So this is incredibly important because remember, the defense argues that Manafort was unaware of everything that was going on. Rick Gates was the ringleader of everything. And so Manafort should be let off easy. But that is not the case based on the evidence that was compiled by special counsel Robert Mueller.
Yes. And so look, prosecutors, including Robert Mueller's team, and also honest media like us, are going to tell you the whole truth. So if they wanted to manipulate something, they would never have Gates agree, yeah, I also stole from Manafort, because that helps make Manafort's case. But they say it, why? Because it's true, mm-hmm. It's true, and they're not going to lie about it, and they're not going to cover up evidence. Sometimes there are dirty prosecutors who cover up evidence that doesn't help their case, but that's not these guys. They're above board, so they present it to the jury and then let the jury decide. Hey, now you have the full context, and Gates did steal from Manafort, but you also have the context of Manafort moving all that money abroad and his accountant now telling you that he participated in the fraudulent schemes. And again, remember, Manafort was Donald Trump's campaign manager, a pivotal player in his campaign. But this trial is not about Donald Trump. It's about other financial dealings that Paul Manafort had, coincidentally or otherwise, with pro-Russian forces, this time inside Ukraine.
All right, well, let's move on to some foreign policy news. Donald Trump has officially reimposed economic sanctions on Iran. Now, this follows some of Trump's warlike rhetoric on Twitter geared toward Iran. And he did essentially pull out of the Iran nuclear deal, which was negotiated by President Barack Obama back in 2015. Europe is very much against what's going on right now, but here are the updates in terms of these sanctions. So Trump said, quote, as we continue applying maximum economic pressure on the Iranian regime, I remain open to reaching a more comprehensive deal that addresses the full range of the regime's malign activities, including its ballistic missile program and its support for terrorism. I mean, there's no mention of US support of terrorism when it's Saudi Arabia conducting the terroristic acts, but nonetheless, I'll move on. Trump is also planning to renew other sanctions in 3 months, including ones targeting Iran's lucrative oil industry. So there are more sanctions that are set to take place or take effect in November of this year. But so far, the economic sanctions have begun.
So here's what I get out of this story. There must be some powerful oil lobbyists doing a lot of work inside the Trump administration. And I'll tell you why. So right now, Iran has not broken the deal. We broke it. But it's not just us and Iran. If we had broken it, then Iran would be free to break it anyway, because it doesn't exist anymore. But there's actually other parties involved. The European countries are allies, but also Russia and others involved. So those players say they deeply regret that America broke the deal and violated its terms, but they are still willing to abide by the deal. So as far as we know, so is Iran. So in terms of the actions, Iran is not pushing towards war. So they say one thing that was a little aggressive, we are the mother of peace, but if you attack us, we'll be the mother of wars. Trump loses it and does this maniacal tweet, etc. So you could say, hey, forces pushing for war are winning here, and I think that's true. But if you notice in Trump's tweet, he also talked about, hey, look, I'll sit down with them, which is great. Which is, you know, he should have never ripped up the deal in the first place. It was a perfectly good deal. All of our allies agree, etc. But he's willing to sit with them, fine. That's good news. But they specifically then talked about sanctions about their energy sector and their oil. Now, what will that do? If US has sanctions on Iranian oil, it will limit the supply of oil, thereby increasing the price of oil.
Yep.
Now, this is the second action in a week that massively helps oil companies. The second was totally unrelated to this issue. We talked about it last week. It was how he was going to rip up the fuel standards for cars. Now, you think, no, that's for the car manufacturers. No, the car manufacturers at this point say, don't do that. That's going to give us two different rules. We don't want that. It's going to give us uncertainty. But what it would do is create demand for a lot more oil because the cars are not fuel efficient. Billions of dollars in oil. So two decisions, seemingly nothing to do with each other, but the common theme is oil companies are the big winners here. My guess is if you looked a little bit more into it, and that's why Trump administration is one of the worst in transparency and are trying to make sure we cannot find out who they met with. My guess is that some oil lobbies have been doing some substantial work inside the White House recently.
Yeah, that's a really good guess, especially when you take all of this in the context of what he's trying to do with fuel efficiency standards. Because remember, that will increase our reliance on oil, right? And that will make oil companies incredibly happy. And when that story broke, oil companies were the only, it was the only industry that was happy about Trump ripping up those fuel efficiency standards. The car industry, as Cenk correctly mentioned, was not in favor of it because now there's going to be this ongoing legal battle between some of the blue states that want efficient vehicles and the federal government, which is essentially ripping up fuel efficiency standards. Now, just to point to Trump's maniacal tweet against Iran. Earlier, he had tweeted, to Iranian President Rouhani, never ever threaten the United States again or you will suffer consequences the likes of which few throughout history have ever suffered before. We are no longer a country that will stand for your demented words of violence and death. Be cautious. So as you can see, all caps, very intense. And it's just, it's fascinating how he treats some countries while giving other countries a complete pass when they threaten us. An example of that would be Russia, where they essentially showed a video during Vladimir Putin's address to Russia showing nukes hitting Tampa, Florida. It was a simulation, but here's what he essentially showed everyone in the world, and Trump said nothing about it.
And they hit Florida. So Iranians do not have nuclear weapons. The Russians do. The Iranians did not say we're going to launch nukes against you. The Russians did a simulation where they launched nukes against us. That was during Putin's annual address to the country's Federal Assembly. And what's in Florida? Well, a couple of things. One is United States Central Command directly threatening our Central Command. By the way, another thing that's in Florida is Mar-a-Lago. But Trump said nothing about that. Nothing about never threaten us. Nothing about how dare you. Nothing about your nukes. Nothing about attacking Florida. Nothing at all. So when the oil companies have money to make, all of a sudden, all caps, don't you dare threaten us. When the Russians go, here's our missiles hitting Florida, rub it in your face. Sorry, sir. Yes, sir. Of course, Mr. Putin, sir. Yes, sir. Gee, I wonder what Donald Trump's interests are. I can't quite tell.
And just quickly going back to the whole oil issue. Remember, Germany made a deal with Russia to essentially build another pipeline that would send oil from Russia to Germany. And Trump specifically targeted Angela Merkel, right, the leader of Germany, over that issue. But there was absolutely no pressure toward Vladimir Putin, no anger toward Vladimir Putin for making that deal. All of the anger and intensity was directed toward Angela Merkel, and I just thought that was fascinating.
So because he can't criticize Putin, gee, I wonder why. That would Putin him in trouble. But Anna, that's a great point, because I hadn't thought of that. That's actually the third time that he helps the oil companies, right? Do not do deals where our oil companies are circumvented. Don't do that, because I really care about foreign policy. I mean, and it's Russia doing the deal, but I can't criticize Russia. So I'm going to instead viciously attack our allies. So, and here he is, by the way, when he rips up the Iranian deal, he also attacks our allies, because our allies support that deal, want us to abide by that deal and our word that we gave. But he thinks, who cares? I got a swamp to run. Where's my oil lobbyists?
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, my favorite story of the day, Alex Jones.
Drums. Thanks for watching what I hope was a lovely edition of the Young Turks. Now, you know that is two of the five segments that we do because that's free. We want to have you support independent media and come watch the whole show that we do every day. That's five segments overall, no ads at all. That's at tytnetwork.com/join. Come become a member. Thanks for watching either way.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.